God wants to send you as a missionary in whatever category that is, whether it's to be that filmmaker or the cowboy or the artist or the soccer player or the preacher to the hidden people groups like you saw so much of. This morning we've talked a bit about what have you got in your hand, and I've told you a little bit of our journey in YWAM. I'm going to weave that throughout our time together. I particularly want to talk to you about the place that New Zealand has had in the forming of this mission. But we'll weave that through as we go, keep on going. But you've been reading that great book, Is That Really You, God? So I'm going to tell you a story that probably if we titled this one, it would be, Is That Really You, Dar? You saw as we were sharing the pictures about the family that Lauren and I each grew up in. We were extremely privileged. Privileged in the sense that we had parents who loved God with all of their hearts, who had a passion for missions. As Lauren and I look back and talk about our own life, we realize we were really kind of poor. Lauren's family probably more so than mine. They lived in tents. They lived one time in a well house. It was just this little place where they used to keep a well. They made bricks with their hands and made those bricks into churches. And they didn't have a whole lot materially. We lived behind the church, below the church, beside the church, because I was a preacher's kid. But do you know what, guys? We never, either one of us, grew up feeling underprivileged in any way, or that we were poor, or we didn't have anything that other people did. We both grew up with such a sense that we were a part of the team. That my parents, Lauren's parents, we were doing some of the most important work that could possibly be done. And there was such this sense of God looking after us and seeing God in so many things. So some of you, as you're thinking about raising your families and having a life in this mission, can I just encourage you that God knows exactly what you need? Our parents, both sets of our parents, never looked out for themselves at all. My folks didn't have their own house until probably they were in their 60s. But in their old age, both of our sets of parents were very well taken care of. Lauren and his sisters, all three of them have excellent educations. I have a good education. My parents never put aside money for our education. God knew what kind of education we needed. Our son David has been called to be a filmmaker. He has 2 degrees, one from the University of the Nations and another from the University of Southern California. Americans would know that USC is an extremely expensive school and one of the best schools you can go to at being a filmmaker. We never paid a cent for David's education. God knew what they needed. And so, particularly you young couples, you know, the grandparents can put a lot of pressure on you. This is fine for you, but when you have kids, this is not a good lifestyle to bring your kids up in. I'm here a living proof. It's okay. God does remarkable things. And I just want to give a great big rave review for who God is and how he looks after you in that call of God that's on your life. You saw pictures earlier of our children, and it was mentioned about the University of the Nations. I just give you this little commercial, okay? Our son David, when he was about 12 or 13 years old, he felt like God called him and that he wanted to be a movie maker. Now, I come from a long line of pastors and missionaries, and so does Lauren. So David came to me and told me what he felt like God was saying to him. And so I went to Lauren and I said, Lauren, David's going to come and talk to you about something. It's probably not going to make you real happy, but you better respond right. Because you have to know that both Lauren and I grew up in a really strict denomination. You couldn't go to movies and so on, and here our son wants to become this movie maker. That changed as we had the opportunity to change it, but nevertheless, I meant for us seeing movies. I'm a real movie fan. So David said to his dad, I come from this long line of preachers. I want to preach too. I just want a different kind of pulpit. And he said, I want to make movies. And so Lauren said, oh, that's great. You know, like Billy Graham movies. And David said, no, I want to make movies that will be shown in mainline theaters that will provoke people to think and pursue God. So he took his education at the University of the Nations. He took our digital, he did his DTS in Amsterdam, took our digital filmmaking course. Now, when you study within the University of the Nations, as you move on to other courses, everything is set in a modular way, and so you learn one subject very intensely. So David, in his digital filmmaking course, had some of the best people in the industry who are Christians. They would take their holiday time or take work off from working for a TV network like ABC and come give 2 weeks to these eager young missionaries and teach them. So the learning curve goes up really fast. It's also, we're always looking to what does God say about this. I think that helps your learning curve too. So David, after he finished that coursework, some of his first work just as a student was put on television. Then he went to another school, not USC, but another school in between. And he came in with another kid who had graduated from courses at the University of the Nations. His name was David, too, so they called themselves David and David. And they started a little editing thing out of their closet at the university. So they came in as underclassmen. And the seniors in that university were competing with filmmaking, their filmmaking students. And it would be like doing your final paper, only you do it on film. So son David went to the professor and said, my friend David and I would like to compete with those people. And they said, no, you can't. There's only two of you. You've just come into the school. These are four-year students. No, it doesn't fit. Well, because I know this kid really well, I think he probably made the professor's life miserable and finally said, okay, do it. But he said, you can't use any of the equipment in the daytime when others need it. You can only work when the other students don't need it. And there's no way you can do this. There's only two of you. These are bigger teams. But yes, you can go for it. At the end, when they had the competition with the films, it's only prestigious within that school, but they had their little Oscars, all right? And they had seven categories. And David and David walked off with five. And it was because of the intensity of their learning, the skill and the passion of those that were teaching them. And so he went on and as he was in USC, I can't remember which year it was, but God spoke to him and said, if you want to be this filmmaker, you need to be sure you have understanding of the content. So he pulled himself out of USC for that time, went to Chile, did a school of biblical studies, understood that you have, and what he was able to do, and this is one of the things you can do with the University of the Nations, you can run, if we don't have what you need, you can run a parallel course, and that's what he did. So he would take courses with the University of the Nations, then go back to USC. And so that he graduated with both of those degrees, having literally, by the time he was 18, now this is because he hung out with us as his parents, but by the time he was 18, he'd been in 100 countries. And never did you think that being this missionary's kid, having that kind of experience really put him ahead. And he's been able to do some really great things and is working on many projects. Sometime when we have a little extra time, we'll show you some of those projects. I have some clips. Our daughter, Karen, she's a preschool teacher. We knew from the time she was a little girl that that's probably what she was going to do. She was called to be serving the young child. And she took her training. She did her DTS in Hong Kong. She studied in Taiwan. She studied in New Zealand. She studied in Hawaii. She studied in England. And you see, all those courses come together. If you think about like Lego blocks, how it all fits together. Your curriculum is woven through you, and you can study literally all over the world. What this gives you is an international, global education based on God's curriculum, and you can then start and be able to weave all of this together. You can also get your AA degree in the country that you are. You don't have to travel all over the world. But I just want to say yay for what God's called us to do with the University of the Nations. That's all because they asked me to speak this afternoon about it, and I just thought, I got to tell you some things about it too. If I was going to talk to you about who that was, really, Udar, I remembered now where I was, all right? My parents. Education. I've got the thread now. Okay. So I grew up in this household where my parents had a great love for missions. The first time that I personally ever remember prayer in an impactful way was when I was a child, probably 4 years old. And we were praying for my Uncle Claire, who was a missionary in China. Now, as a little kid, I knew that the Chinese people were the most important people in the world. I was absolutely sure of that because my uncle was willing to lay his life down for them. I understood that. He was this missionary with this call to China. I still, to this day, have gifts he gave me as a little kid. His life so impacted me. I can remember trying to work out this thing with chopsticks. I think he's the first person that kind of gave me a glimpse into the joy of other nations. But he was in concentration camp under the Japanese in China, up in Qingdao. And he was about to starve to death. And he could just barely walk around. And he's walking along this kind of wire fence. And he's saying to the Lord, I'm ready to meet you. But I have a wife and two children, which he had sent out back to Canada. He had stayed on in China and then was taken by the Japanese. And he said, I'm ready to go, but I so want to see my family. And just then, a chicken came underneath that wire fence and laid an egg at his feet. And after that, he had door-to-door delivery of eggs. This uncle had so many wonderful stories. And I remember praying for him at that time. If I tell these stories, I probably won't tell and get anything else done, but he went to be a missionary when he was in his 30s, and to learn a new language when you're in your 30s is tough. And he was studying Chinese, and he found the language difficult. But he was doing his very best, and he was up in a rural area trying to preach the gospel in his broken Chinese. And the Spirit of God came down in the place. And the Holy Spirit came, and this little farmer lady began to speak to my uncle in perfect English and began to encourage him and said, I've seen your effort. I know what your needs are. I'll touch your tongue. And he spoke Chinese well after that point. That's just great. So this was my influence. We lived in the basement of the church, and there was a missionary that came from India. And the church would be kind of built like this, a little bigger, and then like back where this screen is and back that direction, there was an apartment that the visiting pastors or missionaries would come and stay. And because of my father's passion for missions, he worked to try to get the budget of the church 50% missions, 50% local, and was always bringing missionaries in and passing on that missionary vision. So this missionary from India was staying there, and we lived down below. And I heard the missionary walking in the church, and I could hear his voice. He had a large voice. So I snuck up the back stairs, and I laid under the pews so he wouldn't see me because I was a curious child, and I wanted to know what he was doing. And this man was saying all these funny names. And he was walking back and forth in the church. And tears were coming down his face. And he was praying for his Indian brothers and sisters. And I saw his love for what God had called him to. So I was totally exposed to this love for missions. So when I was 9 years old, I had an experience in the Holy Spirit where God visited me in a very dramatic way. And I felt like God's calling me. Here am I, send me. And I had a picture in my mind of a building a bit bigger than this. It had a tin roof, and around the edges were bamboo poles. And sitting as close together as they possibly could sit were little Asian children. So I knew for sure I'm called to be a missionary to China, because that was my whole reference of missions was China. And I was sure that that's where I was going to be called. Well, God expanded that call, but I do have a warm heart towards Chinese. Just as a little sidelight, but when I was 39 years old, which, of course, was not very long ago, I don't know why you're laughing. We were working out in the refugee camps in Thailand. And this is when the time when so many Cambodians and Vietnamese were brought in during the time of Pol Pot. And we'd been doing all kinds of things, and I was tired. It was the end of the day, and we were coming home in this Jeep, and I was sweating and bouncing along on that Jeep road and rugged road in the Jeep. And all of a sudden, it was like God popped a DVD, well, probably be a cassette in those days, into my head. And I realized I had just spoken to 850 children in Thailand, Cambodian and Vietnamese, and it was the exact picture I saw when I was 9 years old. Isn't that God great? So it was really quite a fulfillment for me. So as I moved on in my education, I was always pursuing going for God and going to be this missionary, and I felt that I was to be a nurse. So I went to nursing school, went to school around the year for a little over 3 years, and was able to graduate. I had wonderful opportunities during that time, was able to win my roommates to following Jesus, and just loved what God was calling me to do, and I wanted to be involved in missions. And graduated from school and ready to go to be a missionary. But everywhere I would look, it was another 4 years of school. I've been there, done that. I'm ready to go. Want to do something. And so none of those things kind of quite worked out for me. I started a ministry for elderly people with some of my nurse friends. Very active in ministry. I, at this time, would be 21 years old. And this mission call, then I sort of wanted to tap down a little bit. It wasn't happening easy for me. And besides that, I had fallen in love with somebody who didn't feel called to missions. And so that sort of was that final confirmation. I don't have to be this radical missionary. I'm already doing lots of good ministry here. I love God. Why do I have to go for this radical way? And decided that was not the direction I was going to take. Well, I already let you know I really am close to my parents, and of course, they weren't very happy about this relationship because they knew about the call of God on my life. And it got a little cool between us, not awful, just not what it always had been. And this relationship I was really very emotionally involved in. Was a very fine person, had lots of things in common, and the relationships got tighter all the time. So it was a Friday night, and this young man asked me to marry him. So to show you how really sure I was, I said, give me the weekend. And these nurses that I did ministry with, we all lived together, and they were really like my extended family. So on Sundays, we would attend my father's church, and it was just our tradition to always go out for dinner with my mom and dad, and they were just like extended family to us. So Saturday, Dad calls, and he said, "Dar, when you go for dinner with us on Sunday, I want you to come by yourself. Don't bring the girls." I thought, oh, I know what this is about. It's going to be the talk again. And so I said, okay. Now, my father was an extremely punctual man. We had a clock in every room of the house. That is not an exaggeration. That is honestly not an exaggeration. We never ate a meal off schedule by 5 minutes. I think I married a man, guys, that I don't think they ever ate two meals at the same time. So it's been a good process for both of us. So you have to know that little bit because it shows you a little bit about my character, I guess, because I came to church late just to show I could and irritate my dad a little bit, you know. So then they introduced the speaker, who is this Mr. Lauren Cunningham with Youth with a Mission. And I thought, oh, I know what this is about. Because, you know, I was the preacher's kid. And all these young evangelists would always come in looking over the preacher's daughter, you know. And I thought, I don't want any part of this. So I'm a bit intrigued about what he's talking about. But I can kind of see my dad's hand in this. Not much of God's hand, Dad's hand. So I, as soon as the service is over, I get out in my little souped-up Ford, and I head out. I leave. And I get down the road a few kilometers, and I think, don't do this, Darlene. Show some respect to your parents. So I come back, park the car, and we go out for dinner. And, of course, Lauren is absolutely consumed with the call of God. And he talks about young people, their place in missions, the excitement of that call. And I'm just eating, you know. But I like him. And I can see he knows what he's about. His calling is so clear. So when we come back in the car with my dad, he lets us both off to go into our cars and leave. And it turns out my car now is parked by Lauren's car. And we stand in the parking lot for a couple hours and talk. Somewhere in that conversation, I didn't tell him my circumstances at all, but somewhere in that conversation, he says to me, "Darlene, do you know what's the matter with you?" He said, you just want to compromise. And I went, So I go home, and I can remember saying to one of my roommates, "I think I've just made a really good friend. I think I've met somebody who really knows what they're about." So now, as tradition in some churches, you have a morning service and an evening service. And so now we have an evening service. And it's more about Youth with a Mission. And what was also our tradition, a whole group of young people, afterwards everybody goes out for coffee. Lauren was traveling with some young men who were YWAMers. And somehow at the coffee place, this guy by the name of Dwayne is right across from me. And he said, "I understand you're a nurse." I said, "Yeah, I am." He said, "You know, we need nurses. I've just helped build a road into the hospital in Liberia. We're looking for nurses. Why can't you say yes?" And he just barreled into me. I'm just sitting there, you know, going back. That's not right for everybody, guys. But boy, it was exactly what I needed. Because he wouldn't let me go without giving an answer. And just as we're getting ready to leave the coffee shop and all, Cunningham comes alongside, talks to me for a few minutes, and then he says, "Are you committed to anybody?" How rude. But my answer is a bit telling, okay? I said, "I don't know." So I went home and I laid down on the floor and I thought, my excuses are gone. Everything I said I wanted to do for missions tonight was in my face. But I was deeply in love with this young man. And I knew those two things would not go together. Now, just a little bit of the backstory. I told you my father is extremely well organized. So everything always planned well ahead and all. And Lauren was actually to be speaking somewhere else that Sunday. And that invitation, there was some kind of mess up on. And in the very last minutes, Lauren was made available to speak. And Dad contacted him, which is just totally out of character. So I have this invite on the Friday. Lauren speaks on the Sunday. So I laid out on the floor and said to the Lord, I will be a single lady missionary for the rest of my life. I'm going to quit putting this relationship before you. And I really dedicated my life and you to missions. Here am I. Send me. I had to meet the young man on Monday. And he said to me, Darlene, what happened to you at 11 o'clock on Sunday night? He said, I know you're going to tell me no. And I know the relationship is over. And I said, yeah, that's right. So I pursued filling out the applications and going for YWAM. This took quite a long process because when you committed for a year. So there was a lot to it. I was excited to go about this, but this is probably a month or 5 weeks later, and I'm working as a nurse. It's a lunch hour, so I have a break, and the boyfriend comes back to meet me. I know we're going to be at the same party that night, and he came back to see about some kind of reconciliation together. I didn't say the wrong thing. I didn't look the wrong way. I was absolutely steadfast. But inside, all the old attraction was there. It was, I handled it right on the outside, but not on the inside. And because it was a lunch break, the surgery room was empty. And I can remember locking that door and getting down on my knees and said, Lord, the mind has been made up. I'm trying to match my will and my emotions to my mind, and I'm not doing a very good job. Please help me with what I can't seem to help myself with. You have got to do something about these emotions. My mind's made up, but I have to get my emotions to match my mind. So I want to encourage you. Some of you might be in that position, and God did it. So I went to that party that night. Remember, this is in the days before cell phones. I mean, doesn't that just seem impossible? How do you live without a cell phone? I wonder that myself now. When I've lost my cell phone, you know, it's like I've lost my arm. And half my brain. I haven't fully been able to get my brain engaged on my cell phone, but I got a half of it there. So we come to the party, and one of my roommates said to me, Dar, you got a telephone call, and for some reason, I believe it's somebody you really have to talk to. I said, well, who was it? She said, I don't know. I just know it was important. And she said, so I told them to call you at this party. So if you get a phone call at the party, you take it. And she was a very perceptive person in the spirit, so I really did listen. So the phone call comes. Hello, this is Lauren Cunningham. Hello. Oh, I wonder what's wrong with my application. Why in the world is he calling me? How are you? I mean, it's really stupid question. Just stupid conversation, you know. Because the whole time I'm waiting him to say I flunked my application process. You know, something's wrong here. And I said, well, where are you? And he said, oh, I'm at an airport. I've forgotten where. I guess I should have known what I was getting into, huh? So he said he lived in the Los Angeles area. I lived in the San Francisco area, okay, in California. So he said, I'm coming up to speak close to where you are, and I'd like to see you when I come up. I'm thinking, what for? I said, well, okay. But I'm thinking, oh, something's wrong with my application. He's just going to try to let me down nicely, you know, and all. So he comes up, and we see each other. Nothing happens about my application, and we have kind of a good time. And then a very unusual thing happens. Lauren seems to get a permanent call to Northern California. Every time I turn around, Lauren Cunningham is there. And we have developed a really nice friendship. And what appeals to me about this guy is this passion for the calling. And I can remember saying to him, well, what is your next big goal? He said, I want to see 1,000 young people mobilized. And that seemed huge to me, 1,000 young people mobilized to go into missions. So this friendship continues, and again, I keep seeing him all the time. And then I was going down to Los Angeles to be with a cousin of mine. So he said, well, when you come down to L.A., let's get together down there. And it's a couple nights before I'm to go, and I think, this is not good. I'm not going to see him down in L.A. So I call him, and I said, I don't think I'm going to be coming down to L.A. We've had a change of plans and so on. He said, oh, he said, I planned the whole weekend. He said, I'm planning the weekend. This is a very good little hint for you guys, okay? He said, I've planned the weekend. So he said, I'll be there to meet you when you get off the plane. But he said, if you don't get off that plane, I'll just get on the next one and come up to San Francisco. So it'd probably be easier for you to come down. I went down. So time goes on, and this friendship gets a little closer and a little closer. So now it's time for me to have my YWAM interview. Now, in those days, you had to have this interview, and it would be a pastor and several people that knew you, because you were, remember, YWAM is really young. It's very controversial, so they're trying to be extremely careful that people understand what they're committing to when you were going for a longer term. So we're driving down to the interview. Lauren's driving me. And one of the people at the interview was the president of a Bible college who I'd known all my life and some other people. So as we're driving, Lauren looks at me. He says, Dar, I want you to know I really do care for you. I said, don't say that. I'm going for my interview. Don't talk to me like that. I'm thinking, what am I going to do? So we get into the interview. And I do really well with all the questions and so on. And this guy that was the president of the Bible college, he said to me, Darlene, I think you would make a good YWAMer. I think you'd be a good missionary. But he said, I've known you all your life. You've been engaged a few times. You've always had a boyfriend. So it's important. You can't have any relationships during this year. So I need to ask you, are you involved with anybody or not? I'm thinking, am I or am I not? Lauren's sitting at the table. Am I or am I not? So I said, no, I'm not. As we walk out, I'm thinking, did I lie or didn't I lie? Did I lie or didn't I lie? So time goes on, Lauren and I are out together, and he says something about getting married. I am absolutely sure I did not hear him right. So I changed the subject really fast, just really fast. I thought, no, I didn't hear that. I know I didn't hear that. Changed the subject really fast. And talk, you can imagine. So then He stops the car, and he said, I think I need to say something to you again. He said, I don't think you really understood what I was asking. So he says it all really clear this time. And they think, well, I have to think about that. And his face fell. I said, now I've thought about it. Yes. And they lived happily ever after. You can imagine the teasing that I got from that president of the Bible. Already taken a trip as when he was probably 23, I think. At this time when I met Lauren, he was 27, just turning 28. And he had taken this trip around the world, proving God great. He had very little money, and what he did have, God said, give it away. And God supernaturally provided for him. And what God was doing, he was taking him on his own adventure. So he had authority to say, come go with me. I've proven God in this way. So now we have a few young YWAM teams placed around. And we were going to take this trip around the world. He was going to, and then we would be married. 4 or 5 weeks before he was to leave, I thought, this is ridiculous. Why should he go on that trip around the world without me? If I'm getting called into this mission, I ought to be going to him. So I wrote him the sweetest letters I could think of, and it worked. And to my mother's dismay, within 4 weeks we were married. This is not the best honeymoon for everybody. We went immediately to France, sleeping on the ground, going door to door, talking to people about Jesus. It was absolutely, absolutely right for us. So we start out on this trip together. In one of those clips I talk about before Lauren and I were married, us putting the map of the world down and Lauren sharing with me the nations of the world. With such love. I had such anticipation. And he said to me, Dar, you're going to find out they eat different kind of food. The culture does things that you don't always understand. But he said, usually there's a very good reason for it, if you'll just ask the right questions. He said, never look at a new culture as something, oh, this is so different than ours. This is just not as good as what we do. He said, look at it with, why would they do it that way? What can I learn from it? So I had this great anticipation for going to the nations. I told you that when I was 9 years old, I'd been called to missions. So you can imagine my excitement to go to the first mission station. We had had missionaries in our home. I had saved money as a kid for missionaries. I remember when there was a missionary from Africa, and he had a little girl about my age, which was 9 at that time. And my mother coming to me, and she said, Darlene, they're going back to Africa. They have a record player. You'll remember vinyls, or you've seen pictures of them. And she said, you have such a good record collection. Why don't you give her some? So I went through all of my records and chose all the ones I didn't like too much and put together a nice package and proudly came to Mom with my records. And, of course, she'd heard the ones I really loved. And she said, oh, none of these are what you really love. She said, you should give to her the ones you really love, because that's probably what she'd really love too. I said, oh, no, no, and my very favorite was Peter and the Wolf. And she said, what about Peter and the Wolf? No, no, no. But I went back and laid out my records and gave my best. And so this thing with me, was such a gift my parents gave to me, by the way. She didn't force me, but she challenged me to think about what true generosity is. Not giving what you don't care for. Giving your best is true generosity. And I had that joy of giving properly before the Lord. So we're coming into the first missionary station. I tell you all this backstory so you can understand how positive I was about coming into these situations. How much anticipation I had. I had helped as a kid save money to send things to missionaries and all of that. So I'm just nothing but positive anticipation. So we come in, and remember, again, there was a very traditional way to be a mission in missions, there wasn't interdenominational. You were just these certain kind of missionaries. It's important to understand that context. So I come in, and Lauren, who has been this tall, dark, and handsome bachelor for some time, everybody's eager to see who he married. Now, you also need to know about Lauren. He's from an extremely musical family. And he himself is very musical. When he was in university, he was a part of a quartet. They traveled in every state of America. He had made many records. And on that first trip that he'd gone around the world, when he was just, I think, 23, he wasn't known as being a speaker. Youth with the Mission wasn't known. But he could get himself in the door by singing. So he would go around, he got that door open, and then he'd try to share a little bit about YWAM. So Wes, we would come into the context, oh, Lauren, this is your wife, Darlene. How nice to meet you. Hello, Darlene. Where did you go to seminary? I didn't go to seminary. Oh, where did you go to Bible school? Well, I didn't go to Bible school. I'm a graduate nurse. I went to a really good school, St. Francis. What? No Bible school, no seminary? No. I'm a really good nurse. do you sing with Lauren? No. I belong to the Joyful Noise Club, okay? do you play the piano? My mom tried you guys for 5 years. If you don't have it in 5 years, you don't have it. No, I don't play the piano. And then they'd look at Lauren and then look at me. Sort of like, you know, how could an intelligent man like that make a mistake like this? And I couldn't find my niche. I couldn't figure out how to relate. And I really didn't have a lot of insecurities. I'd done a lot of things in leadership, so I was secure in myself. It wasn't that. I couldn't fit. Next place, it's going to be different. It's just this place, okay? And next place. Oh, this is your wife, Darlene. Where did you go to Bible school? Where did you go to seminary? Do you sing with Lauren? No, I don't. Oh, don't you just at least sing alto with him? Sweetheart, if I could find alto, I would sing it. I don't know where it is. Well, you're just shy. I've never been shy a day in my life. You really don't sing. No, I really don't. You don't play the piano? You don't help Lauren with music? No, I don't. Oh. Next place is going to be better. More of the same. And then we had another problem. Now, remember, Lauren has never traveled with a wife. And he doesn't know there's all these clothes, missionary lady rules. I'm not talking about culture. I get that. But missionary lady rules. And you had to look a certain dowdy way in my mind. And nothing I had ever was right. So I just look at the lady, think I got to do something like that. And I get it right in that country by making adjustments. And then the next place it'd be something different. So I'd have the wrong thing around my neck, in my ears, on my lips, the length of my skirt, and my sleeves, and I'm busy trying to make all these adjustments. Now, I told you that I had a very wonderful father but somehow did not ever teach me that the holiness of your heart and the length of your hair went together. And to be a good missionary lady, you had to have long hair in a little bun thing. Bun could be here or here, but you had to have the bun thing. So I decided I got a little hairpiece thing so I could have the bun thing. This lady said to me, oh, it's so nice to see a nice Christian girl with such long hair. How long is your hair? I said, oh, it's quite long. I can sit on it, because I could. I could take it off and I could sit on it. See? Her eyes got really big, and I said, and I can stand on it. Then I said, and I can throw it across the room. Now, honest, really honest, that's the only time I had a smart mouth. But I was just worn out with this. I just couldn't get it right. I couldn't do what was right. So I decided I got to get alone with God, and I got to get this sorted out. So I'm laying on the floor, and Lauren comes in and said, what are you doing? I said, I'm praying. He says, what about? I said, about me. I said, I don't know if you've noticed, Lauren, but I'm about to ruin your ministry. I'm not anything anybody thinks your wife should be. I don't have the right education. I don't have the right talent. I don't even look right. He said, well, Dar, I can easily make a place for you. But he said, I'm not going to. This is between you and God. And he walked out. And I thought he was the meanest man I ever met. But he was so right, friends. This wasn't about Lauren making a place for me. This is about me getting myself sorted out with God. So I'm laying on the floor, and I remind God of my Uncle Claire, how he got given the gift of language. So I said, you can give me the gift of music. If you'll just give me the gift of music, I can do this thing. You can see why I couldn't get trusted with music, okay? As I say that, suddenly, revelation comes. I'm not asking for this gift of music to give glory to God. I just want people to like me. And suddenly, the awfulness of that. And I said, sorry, God. I'm really sorry. Something's really wrong here all the way around. And then the Lord spoke to me, guys, as clearly as I've ever heard his voice. It wasn't an audible voice. And when we say that, sometimes you think, well, I never hear God like that. It's that inner voice. It can be, sometimes it's louder in your ears. So when I say it was louder than I'd ever heard, that's what I mean in my spirit ears. Sometimes it's a little quiet nudge. Don't get all ookie spooky about hearing God's voice, okay? I don't know how else to say it, but God spoke. But that's what I mean. But this was kind of like a loud one. And this is what he said to me. He said, Darlene, did I call you to be the wife of this man? I said, yes, God. There is no going back on that. I know that you called me. He said, then who do you think you are? Asking me, the great God that I am, to think that I would make you wrong for the job that I called you to. Now, guys, here's the main line. This one you need to keep. I gave you the gifts that you have. And the gifts you do not have are part of the plan. I gave you the gifts you have. What you don't have is part of the plan. When I was being put together, he didn't go, whoops, I should have given her musical talent. Oh, whoops, made her a woman and gave her too much leadership. Gonna be a problem. I gave you the gifts that you have and the gifts you do not have. The ones you don't have are according to my plan. And I begin to deeply repent. I begin to see this little piece of clay speaking back to the potter. You didn't do it right. You didn't do it right. But then I had to be absolutely honest with God. And say, God, I am really aware of what my ministry is not. But I'm not so aware of what it is. And probably for only the second time in my, well, no, this was the first time in my life, a scripture reference was came into my mind, 1 Samuel chapter 25. So I look it up. And it is the story of David and Abigail. So David asks Abigail to marry him. She was beautiful and intelligent, so of course I identified right away. You're right, that was a joke. And when she said yes to David, I will be your wife, she didn't say, oh, David, you lucky, lucky man, I am beautiful and intelligent. She said, I will be a foot washer to those that wash your feet. She didn't say, I'll wash your feet, David. I'll be a foot washer to the foot washers. And Jesus said to me, I was a foot washer, and that's what I've called you to be. Oh, no peer pressure there, friends. The right Reverend foot washer. Foot washer PhD. President of the Foot Washers Association. See, all those places I was feeling so sorry for myself, there were plenty of foot washing jobs. I just wasn't looking for those. And I deeply repented. I deeply repented. Now, everything within us, friends, from almost the day we are born, is set up so we compare ourselves to one another. And the Bible says we're not to do that. We see in the Bible that we, even like in the disciples, we see their different personalities, don't we? If we want a quick answer, we're going to go to Mark. If we want him to take a little bit longer, we're going to go to Luke. If we want a little sympathy, we're going to go to John. And if we want to be told what to do, we're going to get going with Peter, right? I mean, we see those in the little we know about their personalities. The Bible says that we are all supposed to have different gifts, and that those different gifts are to be complementary. He said how silly it would be if one of us was just all the eye or somebody else was just the ear. We need every part of the body. But as you grow up in school, how do you get your grade? Not if you did your very best. It's compared to everybody else. And so many of you have the older brother syndrome, the older sister syndrome. They were great in academics. That doesn't happen to be your particular strength. You can fix anything. You can do anything with a musical instrument. But that's a different kind of gift. But you get compared. We get told if we will just drive this kind of car, we will be a success. If we drink this kind of diet drink, we'll look like that girl. You guys, I could swim in Diet Pepsi. I will never have her legs. It's just not going to happen. It's not going to. You can brush your teeth with that toothpaste till you don't have any enamel left, and you're not going to have that girl's sexy smile. But you see how this comparison thing is all the time there amongst us. And when we do that, we get lost. And we keep looking at everybody else instead of looking at ourselves before Jesus. I was asked to take some responsibility, and I already had enough responsibility. And I said, Lord, I really don't want to take this job on. And I tried to explain to him why somebody else could be doing that better. He said, I'm not asking you about somebody else. I'm asking about you. I gave you the ability to do this. So the answer is yes. and we compare ourselves among ourselves all of the time, friends. And all he wants is for us to take what he's given us and use it for the glory of God. Just so I can finish my little story. I think I have enough time, yeah. So I got this sorted out. And I'm all ready to look for my foot washing jobs. I understand now what my call is. So we come into the next missionary station. Please remember, at this time, no emails, no cell phones, not much way to communicate. And phone calls were extremely expensive, so we only did it if it was a life and death matter. So we come into this city, capital city in Asia. We come in by train. So the missionary couple are there. And, hello, Lauren. Oh, Darlene, we're so glad to meet you. And I'm waiting for the following questions. And the missionary lady, she's really nervous. She has this folded, a round roll of paper, and she's just kind of just jiggling around and wrinkling that paper, and I could see she's really nervous. I don't get any of those questions I got before. And she said, Darlene, you know, there was no way to ask you, and I was praying, and I just really felt like God maybe said that this was all right. I hope you'll understand. And she rolls out this big poster. And it says, Darlene Cunningham, graduate nurse to speak. And there were all these schools of nursing in that city. And she had lined up everything for me to speak. Well, when you're a foot washer, friends, you got to do whatever the master says, right? So I said, okay. So Lauren was speaking every night. And this thing with the nurses went really pretty good. So they decided to ask me to speak on Friday night. And this made me really nervous because I had never spoken in front of Lauren Cunningham. And you know how you would feel, okay? So I went to him and I said, now look, I don't know how long I can last. So you stay seated on the platform. And if I run out of stuff to say, I can say, and here is Lauren. And I said, you just get up and do your thing. Well, I spoke 50 minutes. There was never any, here's Lauren. I am sure God brought everybody in that had ever been witnessed to in the last 5 years that night just to encourage me. And from that day to this day, I've never lacked a job. But it isn't always public speaking. And if I could serve you best by preparing your lunch today, I can do that with absolute joy. I really can. See, that's this great thing about being a foot washer. There isn't anything I can't do. And you are in the place, many of you, of trying to figure out, what is God's call in my life? What is it? How am I made? What is my uniqueness and call? So I'm going to make it really easy for you, okay? It's whatever you do that blesses the heart of God and blesses the people that you serve. And then sometimes you just keep obeying God like that. All of a sudden you look back over your shoulder and think, oh, that's my ministry. I see it now. In Kona, where we have the University of the Nation's campus, Lauren and I have had senior roles with that. I've always been kind of over all of the operations and that kind of stuff. And Lauren with the oversight. So you can come in and you can think, oh, the Cunningham's got a pretty responsible job here in this place. We can be gone weeks at a time. And we are. The place just runs fine. Probably better than when we're there. What if the cook was gone? Maybe we could get away with it for one day. Kind of call a fast and so on. 2 days. And we're in trouble. Whose job's the most important, huh? All of those jobs are important. If we didn't have ours, she might not have hers. But if we wouldn't have students if we didn't feed the students. And so I'm a person without musical ability. That is a reality. But I love to worship. I desperately need the songwriter. I need Sam and his team. I need to be brought into the presence of the Lord by their gifting. But maybe Sam decides they'd like to put on a concert. They'd like to have a concert for a couple thousand people. I'm good at putting that kind of stuff together. So I can put my gift with their gift, and a couple thousand people could enjoy that. So I've done all the PR part, and the banners have gone up. Everything's lined up, and we're ready for the concert. They've got their stuff ready. They're getting ready to just get things lined up, doing the sound checks and all. And the sound man doesn't come. Whose gift's the most important, friends? See, we put a false value on the importance of one gift over another. But it's not supposed to be like that. Romans 12 says, look at yourself with sober judgment. Don't think too highly of yourself than you ought to. And then it goes on and shows all the different kind of gifts. And that they're to be all together with love, holding it together. So how silly for me to be jealous of you when God never intended me to have that gift that you have. See, he intended me to help those guys be able to organize a concert so 2,000 people can give glory to God. Let's see, then the day comes and the concert's ready and the sound man's there, sound check's done, 2,000 people, and none of the toilets are unlocked. Whose gift's the most important in that moment, huh? The janitor. And if there's trash all over the place, chairs are all crooked, nothing is in place, trash cans overflowing, the janitorial service. We think, oh, everybody else's maybe is more important than that. The janitorial service is part of what sets up the environment. It's a great gift and a great gift needed amongst us so that wherever we are has some order to it. Are you understanding? Now I'm going to bring this to a close, and I'll let Sam, you guys, help us end here. Because, see, I really need Sam's gift. This is the way it's supposed to be, guys. Lord, please help you get this picture. We're supposed to be like an orchestra with a choir. God the Father is the conductor. The Holy Spirit has given each of us an instrument and a gift to play, a part to sing. And I have this little piccolo. That's my part. And I turn around and I look and I see, oh, look at those drums. Guys all over the place, everybody's looking at them. And the conductor had looked at me. It was my time. And I was so busy looking at him, I missed my part because I was comparing myself to somebody else and I didn't play my part right. There are times when the conductor calls on us and it's eight-part harmony. And when we do this right, guys, they look at us and they say, look at that group of people. Over 50 nations in that room. They're all singing and participating together. A variety of educations, a variety of nationalities, all of that. What's it? What brings them together? And the harmony and the unity between us and the song that we sing is supposed to be so great. People say, I want to sing that too. It's supposed to grab their hearts. But when we're comparing to one another, we miss that. Some of you have believed lies. You've been compared to other siblings or other people. You have believed that you aren't very smart or you are not very talented. And continually, as you look at other people, you just convince yourself that's absolutely true. I'm just not like them. Sweetheart, you are not supposed to be like them. You were never designed to be like them. The unique, remember we started out today with what is in your hand? What is your finger? What is the thumbprint that you have? That's who God made you to be. All he asks is when we stand before him and I say, yeah, but everybody else could do it so much better, God. That's why I didn't. I didn't ask you about everybody else. I asked about you. What are you doing with it? What have you got in your hand, friends? Have you believed lies? Have you compared yourself with others? Can we just take a few minutes now and just do a little bit of homework with the Lord? Can you just say to him, God, I'm just really glad that you made me like I am, musical or not musical, highly academic or not highly academic, whatever that is that's made you feel inferior. Hey, God made you who you are. And if you can just grab hold of, he didn't make some mistake when he made you like you are. Look at, if I was making me for the call I have, I'd be musical, I'd have brown eyes, I'd have brown hair, and I'd have a gift with languages. Now, that just would be just right. I don't have any of those things. But I'm not responsible for those things. I'm responsible to be me, with blonde hair and blue eyes, who can understand a few languages, but if I start to speak it, you don't understand me. Who has no musical ability. And the reason that is so I would always have such great appreciation for people that always do have that. And I'm always looking for how can the body work together? Because I am absolutely 100% convinced that none of us have all those gifts. And I don't care how smart you are. I don't care how talented you are. You still don't have it all. God will make sure that you need somebody else. So could you just take a few minutes and as we just wrap this up, and just say to the Lord, I just want to be who you made me to be. Sorry for comparing, and I receive not just the gifts that you gave me, but I say the ones you didn't give me, that's okay. That was part of your plan. It wasn't a mistake. Can you take care of that with the Lord now?